Can you give me a 1, 2, 3?
1, 2, 3.
Okay. And just again, if you don't mind.
1, 1, 2, 3.
All right. Good. And let me just get my levels right here. Okay. All right. Let me begin then. We'll do about 10, 15 minutes. Just doing an update. Obviously, there's no breaking news unless you know something I don't.
There's this version running circulating on the news sites from Russia about some kind of a connection with some Nagai steppe group of terrorists tied to the Caucasus Emirate. But a recent announcement from an official said all these are rumors and there's no final version and they're still investigating, so everybody should just shut up, is what okay. he basically said.
All righty. Well, let me begin then. Okay. This is Background Briefing, and I'm Ian Masters, and I'm speaking with Gordon Hahn, who is a professor and researcher in the Terrorism and Research Education Program at the Monterey Institute for International Studies. His books include Russia's Islamic Threat and Russia's Revolution from Above. He has taught at several universities in the United States and as a Fulbright Scholar at St. Petersburg State University in Russia. Thank you for joining us, Gordon Hahn.
Thank you for inviting me.
And the attack at the Moscow Airport, which seemed to be targeted at an area where foreigners arrived, seemed to be an attempt on the part of those behind it to embarrass Russia's ability, perhaps to host the forthcoming Olympics and other matters. Do you think that was a part of their strategy?
It's possible, but not necessarily. If it's related to the Caucasus Emirate Mujahideen in the North Caucasus, there would be a logic to attack international interests or elements in Russia because they are more closely connected now to the global revolutionary jihadi movement and al-Qaeda. They're basically now an informal de facto wing of the al-Qaeda in Russia. And they were recently tied to a plot in Belgium and several Chechens, though the movement is hardly Chechen-dominated now, were arrested in France and Denmark this year. And leading sponsors of the Caucasus Emirate amongst the Middle Eastern sheikhs, people like Abu Muhammad Asim al-Maktisi, have called the Caucasus Emirate sort of a bridgehead into Eastern Europe. So it's more of an international-oriented movement now. It obviously has local goals as well. But I would think that might be the tie between this attack and an international element.
Well, I was wondering, though, Gordon Hahn, about a kind of political motive, given that a British tourist was killed along with a famous Ukrainian playwright.
Right. Well, I mean, if it's the jihadists from the North Caucasus, then they are now also willing to target others besides Russians in Russia and throughout the former Soviet Union, really. And so it would make sense to hit Russia, but also in the bargain, kill a few foreigners as well as sort of a declaration of their intent to have a larger sort of profile in terms of carrying out terrorist attacks.
And Gordon Hahn, Russian authorities have fired the people in charge of the airport, and there have been talk of how they have to upgrade their screening, and maybe they need to take some advice from the Israelis. But the long and the short of it is, isn't this an example of the utter failure of their, if you could call them, policies in terms of the Balkans and in particular in terms of Chechnya? They've had two wars, devastated the place, killed God knows how many people, installed a thug down there who's been incredibly brutal, but still the terrorism keeps coming back and coming back. And I'm just wondering if there's any old, since it doesn't look like the stick has ever worked, has anybody thought about a carrot here?
Well, there's no doubt that counter-terrorist operations are carried out in a very brutal way, and there are reprisals against families of suspected terrorists, especially in Chechnya, not so much in other regions of Russia, and there's no doubt that Kadyrov is a thug. But there have actually been some successes. They've been very good at beheading the movement, capturing emirs, though they haven't captured the main emir, Abu Usman Doko Umarov. And the other issue is, of course, it's very difficult to... I know when I go to the airport here, no one checks my bags before I go into the hall, and I can reach a large, very large crowd of people without anyone even looking at me. So to prevent this kind of attack is very difficult, and it would mean setting up screening outside the airports before people enter the airport. In terms of the backlash, of course, there's a backlash because of the brutality of Russian operations, and that's true. But that's only part of the cause. The other part of the cause is radical Islam in the Caucasus and the influence of foreign Islamists within the Caucasus. Even if the Russians were purely democratic and conducted operations according to international law and human rights standards, there would still be an insurgency in the North Caucasus, and there would still be terrorist attacks. There might be fewer, but there would still be some, because there's an attraction amongst some of the youth in the North Caucasus to this radical ideology.
And you don't believe that that, well, to what extent is it because of their memory, I mean, and their treatment? I mean, we know that a lot of these terrorists are widows of people that have been murdered by the Russians. So is this an ideological attraction or blood revenge?
Well, actually, it's an exaggeration today. First of all, many of the suicide, if you're talking about the suicide bombers, many of the suicide bombers are men, so they can't be widows. About half of the female suicide bombers, close to half of the suicide bombers, have had husbands killed by the Russian forces. But if we recall the Moscow subway suicide bombing, the two female suicide bombers, yes, their husbands were killed by Russian security forces. And the reason they were killed is because one was the emir of the Dagestani Mujahideen, and another was a middle-ranking emir in the Dagestani jihadi network. They were wives of these two men. So they were clearly people who had already jihadist inclinations before their husbands were killed. The impression, unfortunately, that our mass media tries to give, especially the Washington Post, and but not just the Washington Post, other newspapers, is that these people are home eating dinner, baking cookies, and all of a sudden the Russians barge in and kill the husbands, and then the women become suicide bombers. That's far from always the case. It's probably never the case.
Sure. So Gordon Hahn, you're telling us that Russia has a problem here. That we don't have an indigenous Al Qaeda movement, as far as I can tell. There've been some isolated incidences, and some of them have been hideous, like the shooting down in Texas on the army base. But it sounds to me like Russia is in a far more different position than we are. And I know you wrote a book, Russia's Islamic Threat, and in that book you suggested that as bad as things are in the Caucasus, in the North Caucasus, there is a great potential for Islamist radicalism spreading into Tatarstan, which is far, far closer to Moscow, and whereas there's only a couple of million people in Chechnya, there's, what, 15 million people in that area?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Tatars make up about 5% of the Russian population, and the Tatars who live in Tatarstan make up about maybe 3% of Russia's population. So there's about 7 or 8 million Tatars altogether, and there are also Bashkirs, and there are some signs that a group of Mujahideen, for example, were killed in Tatarstan this past summer. Alleged Mujahideen, there's always the possibility that something else was going on, and the regime called the Mujahideen to cover it up. But there were also two similar events in Bashkortostan this past summer. And just recently, just the other day, a group published on one of the main Caucasus Emirate websites an announcement calling themselves the Idel Ural Vilayat. Now, all the different regions of the North Caucasus that are under the Caucasus Emir Mujahideen are called vilayats. And this group is claiming that they are part of the vilayat. And in the on their website, they have insinuations suggesting that they were behind an explosion in Bashkortostan, in Ufa, the capital of Bashkortostan, this past weekend, in which several people were killed and several wounded. But the general reporting on that has been that it was an accidental explosion. Now, that's possible. It's very likely that that's the case, but it's possible that it's not. Sometimes these things are covered up, especially in Bashkortostan. But the point here is there has been some jihadi activity in Tatarstan and Bashkortostan. It's not very significant, but still some. Also, about a year ago and 2 years ago, both in Tatarstan and Bashkortostan, groups called Islamic Jamaat were uncovered, and they were sentenced and arrested. And Hizbut Tahrir, which is ostensibly a peaceful Islamist organization that seeks the restoration of the global caliphate, is very active in the region, and several times a year, members of the group are captured. So there is a problem there, but I wouldn't want to overstate it. They're nowhere near to what's going on in the Caucasus right now, but there is some movement in that direction, and we'll see what happens in the next year or so.
Again, I'm speaking with Gordon Hahn, who does research at the Monterey Institute for International Studies and is the author of Russia's Islamic Threat. So, we, of course, have, in the West and here in the United States, are very disappointed with what's happened to Russian democracy and the extent to which Putin has rolled it back. The assumption is the more democracy, more human rights, more transparency, the healthier society is. So I'm trying to get an understanding here from you whether any of this counts. That, in other words, you're saying that this is an indigenous Islamic movement allied to al-Qaeda and has its own logic and its own reasons. And it's not a question of how bad the Russian government is. It's a question of that these people are determined, just as bin Laden appears to be determined.
No, I'm saying that there are actually two causes here. To some extent, the lack of democracy in Russia, the violations of human rights contribute to the jihadi movement. But I think it's overstated, and that's the only thing that's ever discussed here in the United States, and the actual jihadi threat, what these people believe. The jihadists, for example, are on the offense. They consider themselves, their goal is to create a caliphate throughout the region. Obviously, they need recruits. The recruiting pool is increased by the brutality of the regime, but that doesn't mean that there would not be recruits if Russia was a perfect democracy. If you look, for example, at the example in Chechnya, in fact, they are now, in Chechnya is the least active of all the so-called vilayats under the Caucasus Emirate. There are the fewer attacks in Chechnya this year than in Ingushetia, Kabardino-Balkaria, and in Dagestan. Over almost half the attacks occurred in Dagestan.
And that's because Kadyrov is so brutal, right?
I don't know. It's hard to tell whether in some perverse way Kadyrov's brutality is effective. You know, by the way, the general theory goes that it's sort of a bell curve, right? The more the regime is democratic or totalitarian, you have less terrorism. When you have a soft democratic regime or a soft authoritarian regime, then you have more terrorism because it's possible for these groups to organize. In a democratic regime, there's less alienation. And in a totalitarian regime, there's no room for groups like this to organize because if you even speak improperly, you're going to be arrested. So Kadyrov's regime, one could argue, is moving so far in the hard authoritarian, totalitarian direction that it's beginning to have a positive effect. Of course, once they loosen up the situation in Chechnya, it'll explode again. So it's definitely a negative. And, of course, to some extent, Chechens are moving out. Some, I wouldn't want to overstate this, but some operatives are probably moving out of Chechnya and operating in other republics because it's easier to do so. So
just in closing then, Gordon Hahn, the prognosis sounds like there'll be more terrorist acts in Russia and that as the government in Russia becomes more authoritarian and not necessarily more efficient in the grim way that Kadyrov is, we should expect this movement to grow, this jihadi movement to grow.
Well, actually, my view is that the trend right now under Medvedev is that there is a liberalization going on, and just one example is they're now allowing demonstrations in Moscow. Mm-hmm. With the exception that Nemtsov was arrested and some other people at a recent demonstration, but they've just now ruled that that arrest was improper. And a demonstration is to be held on January 31st in Moscow, sanctioned by the authorities. I can give you lots of other examples of how things have been liberalizing under Medvedev. So I don't buy the scenario that the regime's going to become more totalitarian or authoritarian in general, and certainly not necessarily as a result of this this recent attack. I think the greater danger is that once they try to liberalize sometime down the road, 4 or 5 years in Chechnya, that you're going to see a reappearance of terrorism there. So if they got the situation in Dagestan and other places under control, which is a large question in and of itself, then Chechnya could then explode. So, and this, of course, could put brakes on any move towards redemocratization. That's more my concern. And also any major attack, say, using means or weapons of mass destruction anywhere in Russia, or a real wave of suicide bombings in Moscow and, say, St. Petersburg, could put a damper on Medvedev and give reason for Putin to return to the presidency, and then the little thaw that we see going would be squelched. But that's more my concern right now.
Well, I thank you for sharing your concerns and your knowledge here with us today in Los Angeles, Gordon Hahn.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gordon Hahn, who's a professor and researcher in the Terrorism and Research Education Program at the Moderate Institute for International Studies. His books include Russia's Islamic Threat and Russia's Revolution from Above. He has taught at several universities in the United States and as a Fulbright Scholar at St. Petersburg State University in Russia. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back at talking about organ trafficking in the Balkans. We're having a real cheerful show here today. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian.
Great.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.